from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. In 2005, Ang Lee became the first Asian American to win the Academy Award for Best Director for Brokeback Mountain. His newest film is The Life of Pi. It's an adaptation of Yann Martell's Booker Prize-winning novel about a young boy stranded at sea with a Bengal tiger. The movie screened last night at the Mill Valley Film Festival and will be released in theaters nationwide on November 21st. And we'll talk with Ang Lee about adapting novels to film, about his past works, including The Ice Storm and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's all coming up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Yann Martell's best-selling Booker Award-winning novel, The Life of Pi, about a boy and a Bengal tiger lost at sea, is now, after 10 years in the works of film, thanks to Taiwanese-born Academy Award-winning director Ang Lee, who joins us in studio for this Forum hour. Ang Lee's 20-year career includes a diverse range of films, Sense and Sensibility, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Brokeback Mountain, which he won an Academy Award for, and we welcome him to this hour forum. So good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
Pleased to have you, and thank you for being with us. Well, the smart money in Hollywood would say...
Smart money.
Smart money in Hollywood would say, don't make a movie for kids, don't make a movie about animals, don't movie in water or in 3D, and you did all four, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, you're taking chances right away when you're going into this kind of territory, yes?
Yeah, when you like something, you want to make something, you sort of forget about, you only think about the good side, not underestimate the bad side. So, yeah, it's a risk, but I live for this kind of thing. It's indeed an adventure. Yeah.
You really wanted to make this novel into a movie, didn't you? I mean, you were hooked by this novel.
Yeah. But when I first read it, I didn't think it should be made into a movie. It would be too expensive to do justice, just the economic side and the artistic side. It's like an irrational number of pi. It will go on and on. They will never meet. But then I thought maybe if I add another dimension, such as 3D, maybe it'll happen. That was a kind of a silly thought. But I did think of that. I did think sometimes things are so unusual that nobody knows what to do or how to control it, and maybe you can think and work out of the frame. So that's one of those things. It's been haunting. I'm not going to say it's the best book I ever read, but it's haunting. It has elements that's very inspiring. It's mind-boggling. It's so unsettling that I feel I want to do something about it.
Was it the spiritual element of it, which has often been emphasized, that haunted you?
Storytelling, the power of storytelling. That's related to spiritual.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a book or a movie that actually make you believe in God, but it give you a taste of what faith might be taste like, and it raises the questions. You go for the search, and then you also want to talk among people. You want to talk with people. You discuss. Usually, faith is something we don't really discuss, or because it's something, it's very hard to rationalize it. If you rationalize it, it's not faith. Because if you can prove it, that's not faith. You need to take a leap. But then when you do that, what's the point of discussing? So it's something up in the air, mysterious. I think the book provides a platform for people to talk about, to think about it. By the way, and it introduced the power of storytelling, because I think in some ways life doesn't really make sense. It's not human. You know, it goes on God or nature. It just go on in its own way, and which when we try to comprehend it, when we try to communicate it, we need to make up stories. And story gives a beginning, middle, and end. It's a structure. So I think it's really a material about talking the power of storytelling, why we believe in it, and what the word believe means.
I think it's also a love story. I mean, more
yes,
than...
Yes, unrequited love stories.
Yes.
The boy loves the tiger. The tiger does his own thing. It doesn't look back when he leaves. The tiger has emotion, but it's animal emotions, not human emotions. In telling a story, particularly making a movie or Hollywood movie in particular, we make animals do what we want them to do. We want God to do what we want them to do. But the in the real world, it's not. So it's really challenging. It challenges why you make movie, how you watch movie, how you tell stories, how you share a story, and how you listen to a story. All those things, that it's very thought-provoking. It's just haunting me. So in a way, on that process, I forgot that this is a very challenging project. I just have to make it work. I do my best.
Well, you did a spectacular job. I mean, the visuals in this film and the scenes with the tiger, I mean, things that Siegfried and Roy could have never dreamed up come into passing. And it's, you know, we're on that. We're out in the ocean. We're with them, with Pai and the tiger. And many of the scenes are really visually quite stunning and beautiful. I mean, I'm not here to hype your movie, but I want to tell you just some of my personal reactions to it. I was also just, haunting is the word that you keep using, and there are things in it, in the book and the movie that are haunting, and you bring it visually alive. There was a scene, though, for example, and I want to just, I don't want to give away too much of the plot or what you do visually, but there's a scene where the father, who is a man of reason, the boy is going to give meat to the tiger, and he's trying, he really is testing his faith in some way and mm-hmm. trying to connect with and communicate with this beast, this ferocious tiger, tiger burning bright, as Blake would say, and going into the tiger's cage to feed him meat, the father grabs him and says, "I want to show you what tigers do," and then takes a small animal right. And feeds it to the tiger, and the boy sees it. Now, as a filmmaker, you could have shown us that, because you showed us a lot of what, I mean, a lot of animals attacking right. other animals and so forth in the course of the movie, but chose not to, because...
I think this is when a movie is quite different than a book. It's very direct. It demands your attention. You're watching something in photorealistic fashions. I think it would be very hard to watch, you know, if you go directly. It's just too graphic. And the viewers, particularly younger ones, sometimes I found that the older ones has more problem with it, might shut off. If something that stimulate, they may shut off, then you have no feelings. So I think cut away or cut to reaction shot may be the best thing. I even didn't use too gross of a sound, I remember.
No, you didn't. Just, and you make our imagination.
I tune it down, yeah.
You got our imagination. You never used a real tiger in this movie either, did you?
I did. That 23 shots.
Well, there were four tigers that you used, but I mean, there was no real tiger.
With the boy. Yeah,
with
no,
the boy.
No, but that scene, no. I wouldn't risk that boy's life to do this scene.
But it's so vivid, and, you know, you're there. Why did you decide to do 3D with this? What was your rationale?
The 2000s. No, I decided before I know what 3Ds are all about.
Yeah. That was brave.
I saw some cartoon. I just imagine a new media may open up the chance of this movie. That's all there is. And then I did my research, my work, and it's kind of scary. Like anything new, you don't quite trust it. I don't know if I could trust that the new illusion of 3D. I thought from my research, I think it would do water really well. I think to do, you know, it's very hard to sit through a movie with a boy and a tiger on the Pacific Ocean, and we don't have Tom Hanks, so
nor Tobey Maguire, who, by the way, I think at least in the movie was supposed to be initially the writer in the story. I guess I mean you put a big gamble on a new actor at the center of the film.
Yes, I think the best thing is you have the audience sit along with him. I think 3D water will actually bring a new sensation. You actually feel like you're sitting there.
You can get seasick watching this film, actually.
I used many techniques to avoid seasickness. You know, I could rock it a lot more, but I didn't. And I fixed the horizon so it doesn't go up and down on you. just the character go up and down, but the horizon doesn't. That really help to anchor the audience, and they don't vomit. You know, I don't need a throw-up bag and the back of the seats for everybody. But I think it will do 3D very well. And also, I think a new media, a new sensation might bring you up to the state that you're thinking about the subject matter of faith and all that. After all, I think it's something new. It's a new cinematic media. I don't think it should be totally compared to 2D. Is it better or worse? It's just its own thing. I'm glad I get the chance to work on it. It's clumsy to work with yet. The projection is not perfect yet, but it's just in the beginning that we're learning about it. We explore it. I hope the audience come along with us. Yeah.
You think we're going to go to more digital movies and more 3D?
Digital, yes, whether we like it or not. It's going to disappear next year. It happened so fast that as everybody was surprised how fast it happened. Yes, digital, definitely we're going there. 3D, I think it will coexist with 2D. It's different way of approaching visual art. Yeah.
The diversity of your films, as I said, you know, you even made a movie, The Hulk, which probably many of our listeners have seen.
And, right here.
Yeah, that's right, in San Francisco. And Brokeback Mountain and Sense and Sensibility. I mean, it's a range that's really unlike many filmmakers. And something just grabs you? Is that what happens? And you've got to make that film 2 years out of your life? You're committed to it?
Yeah, I didn't have a master plan 20 years ago when I started, and I didn't have a checklist. But different things grasp me. And I think in marriage, we have to stay loyalty. But artistic media approach, I don't think we need it. Yeah, I like fresh things. I'm an avid filmmaker. I would like to go to a forever film school. I like to learn how to make those movies. They're wonderful to approach different type of people, different type of genres. They all satisfy a lot of my curiosity about the media, filmmaking. I think it's a fortunate life I have that I get to explore all this. And also, I fought for it. You know, when you make something successful, people will pigeonhole you. They give you some materials, and you have to fight against it. And every time you have to go out there to prove that you can do that genre. It took at least 5-6 movies to give people confidence that you can do different things. So I struggle with it, and I enjoy doing it. That's the, it's not something I really choose. It's also I've been fortunate I get to do it.
Well, your wonder comes through particularly in this film. We're talking, by the way, with Ang Lee. His new film is The Life of Pi, and it is a film all about faith and certainly a spiritual adventure as well as a love story, as I said before, and all his films are different. There's also an interview that you did where you said that you'd look at filmmaking in terms of tenderness and humility, and these aren't usually the words one associates with directors. talk about that. I mean, that idea that you approach something not only with awe, like you did in this movie, but with a sense of humility.
I think you have to. 'Cause we're small people, and movies much larger than life. You have to approach it with humanity. You know, it just have to. And you're in awe as you're making something. When something happened in front of you, even though you have this ego, you have this desire to stage something, to put out your vision. But when it happens along with real people, and it still shocks you and humble you, you have to do that. And also being humble is the way to keep your sensitivity going. That you're sensitive, you're not dictating some image that are happening, but you are actually allow something to happen. So I think that's a necessity. Not just because I'm a shy person. I think you just have to keep the whole process organic and lively. But I'm not going to say I don't have ambitions. Sometimes it does have. I do feel my ambition. I think everything, every person have two sides. That's the inner side, the inner beast, such as the tiger in the movie.
The tiger within.
Hidden. It's a hidden dragon or the crouching tiger.
Yeah, tigers have been an important role in your life as a filmmaker. Do you find that...
It wants to come out. Yeah. It wants to come out. And then as you're doing it, you have to be humbled and learning at the whole time. Be flexible. I think it's they happen intermittently for me.
This is an expensive film to make, as you indicated earlier, and also very challenging because, the truth about Brokeback Mountain, you're taking fiction and you're turning it into film. You're taking a medium that requires a visual imagination of a reader and turning it into the visual nature of what film is.
Right.
More of a challenge than,
what
say,
you see
just
is
getting
what
a
it is. Yeah.
I just wondered, is this more of a challenge than getting just a regular script without its literary anchoring or background that you get in a novel or story?
Well, movie scripts, I think a lot of people agree with me too, is it's blueprint. It's not like a play that you can use as text, you can read it as literature. I think a film script is, nobody really studied them. They're the blueprint, the starting point of making a movie. So yes, we've been literal on the pages of a screenplay. But the end thing is a vision. And movies, what you see is what it is. It's very direct. And you sit there for 2 hours. You're not going to the bathroom. You're not having a beer or go to sleep and come back and watch it again. It's not quite like that, especially in the movie theater. So it's mandatory to your attention. It's very real. So words is only suggestion. You know, it's a way of communicating to the other filmmakers who understand the media, how to go about things. So that's just a stepstone.
But it's taking one genre and turning it into another, really.
Yes, you have to. Even though you want to be loyal to the book, you have to change that to make it happen. They're by nature very different.
Yeah, I kept thinking, what would it be like to
spend... We're not translated to the words.
To spend 227 days with that. I mean, you have to sort of compress that make it felt by the audience. What drew you to Brokeback Mountain? What drew you to Brokeback Mountain, to that story?
Of course, not familiarity, but there's some... At the gut level, it moved me. There's nothing further away from my life experience than Wyoming gay cowboys. So why was I crying at the end of the short story when I read it? So that's a mystery, and that's the mystery in Brokeback Mountain. And again, that's haunting. And it's challenging. I really want to make that movie. So I cannot really rationalize why I want to, you know, in an interview like this, I have to rationalize, articulate why I do certain things. But when it happened, I didn't know. And when at the end of making a movie, I didn't know either. It's just I want to do it. So that short story, even before I read the script, the short story made me want to make that movie. It's haunting me for about 3 years before I decide to make the leap. I think it's just it's a human... Very human story, very profound. It has a lot of repression and something missing, disappointing in life that haunts you, that's chewing and biting you. And that I want to share that feeling I had when I read the story to the movie audience. I want to share that experience. I want to recreate that experience I had when I read it.
Same with Sense and Sensibility with Jane Austen?
A little different. That was probably the only work-for-hire job I did. Mm. The producer, Lindsay Duran, and Emma Thompson, who wrote the script, approached me. They saw my second movie, The Wedding Banquet. Somehow they think I'm the person to do Jane Austen, and they approached me. Again, it feels like that's something I knew what to do. In my first three movies, I was doing the same thing, except I have to do it in English in the major league and period. So that was the challenge. But it's something, it's quite in my nature. I always make movies and think about what is the proper thing to do.
But they're all so far from your experience. Ice Storm 2 is very far from your background and your experience, about as far as you can get. as you said
after
earlier.
My third movie, yeah, I started to go that road, far away but very close to my heart. So in a way, I can connect to it. On the other hand, I get to satisfy my curiosity about different genre and textures. Yeah,
Ang
filmmaking.
Lee
yeah,
is our guest in studio, and his new movie is The Life of Pi. And I had mentioned earlier that Tobey Maguire was supposed to be at one time in the role of the writer in this movie, and Gerard Depardieu plays the cook, very small role in some ways, but central to the story. And you're dealing with amateur actors here. In fact, the main actor, as I said, is someone who had no experience, and yet 3,000, you went through 3,000, I read, young people to play this role?
Right.
Wow.
I wanted to do, because at that age range, in the book, when Pi drifted across the Pacific, he was he's 16 in the book. So there's no 16 Indian boy that's a movie star that can carry the movie. So you go for the fresh faces. That's just how we do it. And we have an army of Indian agents that just go to every school in India, in the major cities, and have them read. So there's about 3,000.
That's amazing.
Gifts to read. I saw the videos, and over three rounds, it comes down to 12 kids that I get to work with them, try them out in Bombay. And Suraj was the chosen one, pretty obviously, yeah.
And four tigers. And the more ferocious ones were the female tigers, I read.
Yes.
You got more ferocity from... You talk about pre-visualizing, too. What is that process for you? How does that work?
It's an animation. The tool is so wonderful these days and pretty fast. It's like moving storyboard, moving drawings. They're animations. It's time-consuming to do them, but it provides a good visual a tool for me to communicate with the filmmakers to go about shots, and also a convincing tool to the studio that they, you know, help them to see it before they put down the money. So it's a great tool, and also for me, the virtual set. I don't have to go to the ocean to and a big boat to figure out how things work out.
You had this almost world-breaking tank in Taiwan, huh? That was built.
Yes, because no existing wave tank can accommodate what I want to do with the open ocean, so I had to create one. And I figured if I go to Taiwan, the government and people will help me to help creating that wave tank.
Well, let me say for listeners, you will never see a movie with more animals, and including
in a small space.
Exactly, because it's a movie about a family that has a zoo, but there are flying fish, there's a beaching whale, there are meerkats, and sharks, and just about anything you can imagine. The whole movie begins with an array of animals, a display of animals. It's really unlike anything you've ever seen. Let me open the phone lines, and an opportunity for you to speak with one of our leading directors, Academy Award-winning film director Ang Lee, with us in studio. His new movie, Life of Pi, I know it's probably a novel many of you read and didn't imagine could be brought to the screen. We welcome your calls and involvement in the program, and you can join the conversation. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to join us now at 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have for Ang Lee on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Ang Lee is our guest this hour. In 2005, he became the first Asian-American to win the Academy Award for Best Director for Brokeback Mountain, and his newest film is Life of Pi. It's an adaptation of Yann Martell's Booker Prize-winning novel about a young boy stranded at sea with a Bengal tiger, and the movie screened at the Mill Valley Film Festival last night. And we're talking to him about a number of subjects here, particularly about that film, but also about his work, which includes Sense and Sensibility and The Hulk and a lot of other films. He's had a diverse and wide-ranging career. And in fact, looking at some of the tweets here and some of the emails from you, which speak to that, to put it mildly. And you can join us, by the way. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. Post any questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Let's go to your calls, and Joseph, let me begin with you. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. And Mr. Lee, what an honor to be able to ask you this question. Can you speak to the Asian American experience in the cinema, and why is it, I'm Asian American myself, why is it that we are still, after 100 years of cinema, underrepresented in the cinema? You take roles, of course, you've got the Jackie Chans, you've got the Jet Li, but it seems to be around martial arts films. Why aren't we making more progress in, I don't know, I guess more Caucasian-based films? Why aren't we getting lead roles? The other races, Hispanics, Latinos, African Americans, they've made progress. You've got your Denzel Washingtons out there. But it always seems that the Asian roles have to always be more karate-based, or they're kind of the geeky Asian friend in the, you know, in the sitcoms. Why haven't we made any you know, bigger roles for us? Just real quickly, my Asian experience has been big in San Francisco here. I have a white wife. I don't eat kimchi every day, you know, so I don't do karate. I'm just wondering why the Asians do not have a bigger place in Hollywood right now. Thank you.
Well, very simply, we're the minority of the minority. Just the sheer number is a lot smaller. You know, I feel like I want to talk to you just the way I talk to my son, who just graduated from college and wanted to be an actor. I told him how difficult it is. You know, Asian film has the Asian film thing in Asia, and here we're minorities. And this is what I told my son. If you want a good part, you have to write it yourself. I think we have many talented actors out there struggling to get a good part, but that's pretty passive. If you're waiting for a good part, and that's not going to happen quite a lot. Just based on marketing, just the sheer number of our existence, it's smaller. A lot smaller than the African-American community or Latin American community. That's just facts. You have to deal with that. If you have to change it, if you want to change it, we have to create our own material. Not only our ethnic living experience, but as you said, you don't necessarily do karate. And you have to create something that relate to the audience, like to everybody. Broaden your experience, make the humanity that speak. And use your, I think Asian actually right now has a good chance because people pay attention, no, the rise of Asia right now, people are interested in the textures, the uniqueness that we can bring up, but you have to touch that universality to bring them in. So that's something I will say we don't want to complain about, but just create our own material. I think we need more writers to change that. And we are minorities. So we have to work harder to be seen. That's just life. And things will change in the future, I hope. It is changing. From my career, the last 20 years, I see huge changes.
Let me go to another caller here. One of the huge changes came about with respect to Brokeback Mountain. In fact, gays were not all that major a part of American cinema. Paul, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Mr. Lee, I'm a big fan, but I had I read the book fairly recently, and there was an element that I can't imagine how you would do it in film, which was at the start of the book, Pi refers to Richard Parker, and there's a fairly long period of the book where you don't know who Richard Parker is. It turns out to be the tiger, and I was wondering if you were able to capture that.
Yes.
Can I say, as a viewer, it was captured quite well, actually.
Yeah. It was simple. Actually, I work up a device that the older Pi, the present-day Pi, is telling the writer of the book, of this book, the story. So this between their conversation, writer and the older Pi today, And the story he told to the writer that is vividly on screen, that's in the copy tuned to that, I make that quite clear pretty fast.
Here's, thank you for the call. Here's Drew, who writes, so much of how we perceive things is based on the names we give them. It should be no surprise how fascinated we might be when presented with an omni-religious boy named after a swimming pool and the accidentally named Richard Parker, perhaps representing a darker side. This is one of my favorite books. How fortunate we are to have the great storyteller Ang Lee bring it to the screen. Here's Mark, who says, it's a pleasure to hear Ang Lee talk about his film and his life in film. Could he talk a little bit about Good Machine and its importance in his career? Does any comparable company exist today to promote the development and creation of independent films? That was an independent film production company, Good Machine, yeah?
Yes. They associate with every movie I made up to The Hulk. So that was quite a stretch from my first movie, Pushing Hands. Well, I started my career when they started theirs. So Pushing Hands, my little Taiwanese film, was their first movie. It was shot in New York. I had the Taiwanese government's money. I didn't know what to do with the little money. So through a mutual friend of ours, I met these two young men, Jim Shemus, who is now the head of Focus, and Ted Hope.
This was the Riding the Devil.
91. No, the way before that.
Oh,
Pushing
before
Hands. Yeah. 91. Riding the Devil was my sixth movie.
But you made that with Seamus?
Everything I did was with them. Eventually, they raised half of the money for pre-sale, so I get the backbone to make those movies. And they deal with development for my movies. They work with producing and also somewhat selling it. But at that time, Good Machine doesn't have its own funding, so they just pre-sell it. So that's the independent company. That's my backbone for my, two-thirds of my career. And then they gave that to After the Hulk. They formed Focus. That's Jim Shemus, who co-write and produced all my film up to this one.
How did you decide to become a filmmaker? What led you actually into a career in filmmaking?
It's the only thing I could do.
Really?
I'm not good at anything else. And just directing, actually, I found. It took me 20-some years to realize. When I was 18, it's the first time I stood on stage, and I decided I wanted to be an actor, at least theater-related. Then I came to the States in theater department because I couldn't speak English. I couldn't act and not direct. Then that leads to movie directing. When I went to NYU film school, it's very clear that's something I could do well and nothing else. So I stick to that.
But your son may become an actor, or is his son a trajectory of becoming an actor, unlike his father, who became a director?
I don't know. He talked like a director, but he wants to be an actor, so I don't know what to do with him. I wish him good luck.
Here's a listener named Robert who says, Ang Lee is my favorite director working today. Could he please speak about directors who influenced him?
Oh, there are so many. Eventually, it's what you can do, what you want to do. I can have a long list. I give a few.
Who would be at the top, though? I mean, if you had a major influence. Or too many?
No, there are too many. Bergman, for one, that influence in my earlier artistic life, it just strikes me as something, I'm in awe. Fellini, of course. The early Italian neorealism directors. That the melodrama, they bring it up to artistic level and social level and philosophical level. That's something I feel I was very close to do. Japanese director Ozu, when it comes to family drama. And I pick up a little bit of Billy Wilder, too, when it comes. So it's a mixed
bag. Humor. Huh?
And humor. Yeah. And I really admire Stanley Kubrick. There are things I want to explore the way he is, but he's like such an idol for me.
Although that movie he made with Tom Cruise with all the And Nicole Kidman.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, somehow it just didn't work for me. I don't know. I mean, I like Kubrick's work. Many films he made were first.
I think great movies or great filmmakers not necessarily please you all the time. They're into their things. It's so fascinating to watch them and whatever they do.
It's worth failing sometimes, isn't it, to learn more of your craft, you know, as a director?
I found movie works, especially good ones, the filmmakers are looking for failure, not success. You want to go to the edge and feel, you know, feel the edge, feel the falling, and that's when we get the thrill. I don't know how to explain that, like parachuting or something.
Well, there's some of that in the movie you made. I mean, in The Life of Pi. Josh tweets, he's directed such a wide variety of film genres. Is there an underlying theme that drew him to all of these projects? Is there anything that unifies for you?
I don't think about that. Only after making the movie, people ask me that question, I have to think about those things. Each time I start out, I thought I was doing something brand new. Then I think the connection of every movie is rather like a fallback. To some point, I don't know what to do. You have to ground it somehow. You have to communicate. You have to land it. Then you land to those places. I think the subject matter of loss of innocence is always important to me. You have an idea when you're young, and then you deal with real, negotiate through real life, and something lost, and you resist to grow up, and things change on you. You try to adapt, and what is the right on the process? What is the right thing to do? What is the wrong thing? You know, that sort of debate is always in my movie. A sense of insecurity and missing, whether it's a comedy or tragedy, and I use family drama a lot. Because in my personal life, that's where I see things change in life. That I see begin and middle, no, not necessarily end, but a process. So I describe that feeling quite a bit.
You have how many children?
Two. I have two sons.
Two sons. And one you say wants to be an actor, but is more maybe a director. Is the other one aspiring to in film or interested in film?
No, he wants to be a graphic novelist.
Oh.
Well, I guess comic book is the way you call it.
Yeah, no, comic book's not
called.
Very
good drawer and wants to be a writer, too.
We're talking with Ang Lee, and there will be a nationwide release of his new film, Life of Pi, on November 21st. And let's go to more of your calls. So we'll go to Adelpha. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just wanted to make a comment in regards to the movie that will be coming out. First of all, I'm a big fan of Lee, and I'm also a big fan of that book. I read the book about 10 years ago. It was introduced to me by my younger brother, and I fell in love with the book. It's one of my favorite reads of all time. And during the time that I was reading, I kept thinking to myself, wow, this book would make a great movie. And so I have been waiting forever for the movie to come out. I'm just really curious about how all the elements of the book is captured in the movie. I felt, besides just the plot elements and elements that in which visualization came into fruition, there was also the growth that the character went throughout the different stages of the traumatic experience that he had. So I'm just curious to see how that's also captured in the movie.
Well, you have to come to see the movie, see how it's done. I have to consolidate it a lot because it's a two-hour movie, not your reading experience. So, for example, a lot of what's in the first part of the book about the growing up of Pi, all the elements, everything he goes through philosophically, religiously, and in the zoo, I have to consolidate them and make it more, you know, introduce you in about half an hour so we can sink the boat. And
well, forgive me, even later on there's consolidation. You have him. You show him reading Dostoevsky, reading Camus, you know, as opposed
Whatever, the fastest way to establish. The real thing is, I think everybody's most interested in, is how he survived in the ocean, how he deal with Richard Parker, and how he meets God, not in the religious sense, but, you know, God, the abstract idea about, you know, some higher being existence, how that echo with his mind, how that relate to the tiger and the survival the oceanic, which is like a desert, to him, all those elements. I have to do it in filmmaking. You have to come to see it. It's very hard to articulate. I found the hardest part of all is how to conclude it. With a second story, as you know, some of you don't know about that. It really pulled the rug under you. So that's something we never do that. We shouldn't do that in movie making. Because it's more elusive than...
And it's also not visual, it's expository.
How do you wrap it up? That's the real test. And I really struggle. And I almost spent 4 years on this, and thousands of people putting their effort in, our heart and soul. It's a very difficult to make, the most difficult I ever made.
Well, congratulations. It's certainly an achievement. And in fact, we're getting a lot of laudatory remarks. Here's Terry who says, "You make films that touch my heart. Thank you for your work, vision, and courage." Max says, "Your film, Lust Caution, remains for me one of the most important and moving films of the 21st century. Without a doubt, the themes you portray in Lust Caution relay some of the most important conversations from a social, personal, and historical place. What is your reaction and reflection on this film alongside with the mixed reactions from critics and viewers? And also, can you speak of Tang Wai's blacklisting in China? Her role in Lust Caution remains for me one of the greatest film actress roles in all of cinema, and it's a shame that Lust Caution is her only film. You are a treasure to art and to the human condition. Thank you for all you have contributed."
Thank you for your recognition on this film. That movie was very uneven and received. In Asia, it was a cultural phenomenon. And outside of Asia, it didn't get pick up at all. People hardly seen the movie. So thank you for noticing the movie. And that movie took so much out of me. And Tang Wei and Tony Leung, all those
More than
artists.
Life of Pi?
In some ways, it went really deep because I never drift on the ocean, but this part of the history is deep inside of my psychology as I grow up. So it was very fearsome. It's a lot more scary, scarier than portray gay couples in America. I'm putting female sexuality against the Chinese politics, you know, especially the war against Japan. That's really a taboo issue. It's a very scary movie to make, and therefore I think very genuine to provoke something very, very profound in Asian society. Myself, Tang Wei.
You know about her status now in terms of arrest?
Well, she's like Suraj in this movie. It's her first movie, and I got her into this role. Some of what you see is acting. Brilliant talent. Some is real. She lived through the movie, so it's quite poignant. She's beginning to have, you know, after this movie, she acted in the Korean movie and got all the just about every Korean awards there is. She got recognized again back in China. She started to make movies. She's fine. Thank you for asking her. I met her from time to time. I'll take care of her.
We've got Neil as our next caller. Neil, join us. You're on.
Yes, one of my favorite movies was Ride with the Devil. I haven't heard much about that. I know that movie probably didn't make money at the box office, but it did even break even. Do you know why that movie didn't do any better?
No, that was a flop, the movie, commercial flop. I'm very proud of the movie. Thank you for mentioning that. Well, the movie just hardly got released. The studio saw the movie. They didn't know what to do. They sort of dumped it. And a few years ago, it's very nice of Criterion. They did a Blu-ray version of the movie, and I got to go back and put 11 minutes back as a director's cut, so they got re-released in a Blu-ray version. Well, thank you for noticing that movie. That was not a success when it came out. I guess maybe too authentic.
Well, we thank you, Neil, for the call.
It's not quite fit the culture convention here, so to speak. Didn't get well received or enjoy any commercial success.
Well, speaking about cultural conventions, I have a listener who wrote on the web, are you interested in making films about Chinese history, such as biographies of Chiang Kai-shek or Chairman Mao? Or are you interested in producing movies about Chinese popular religion? These two genres are both very challenging. Hope you're willing to take challenges like these closely associated with your personal cultural background.
Yeah, if cinematically I found them challenging, interesting, I'll get into it. Sure. I have no intention of producing movie. I'm a terrible producer.
We'll get another caller on for you, and this is Run Fong. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. It's really great to talk to both of you because in my heart, both of you are the best in your field. I mean, Mike and Andy. My question is regarding a movie I heard in the news a few years ago. I think the Chinese name is Zhu Lin Qi Xian, and the English name should be The Seven Hermits in the Bamboo Grove. And I'm wondering if you still want to make that movie. And if not, I really hope you will, because somehow I have this feeling. I think you can hear in my voice, I'm very emotional. I have this feeling that this might be the ultimate movie you want to make as a Chinese intellectual. And I think this movie will be very relevant both to China and also to the world today.
Well,
I really hope you can make that movie. And also, I'm wondering if you have found the right script writer for the movie.
I read the same thing as you did, and nobody approached me with that project. I don't know why that was on the news. So I don't really know more than you do about
what is
that.
What was the project exactly?
It's a Zhu Lian Qi Xian. There's a seven hermits. They're philosopher in Song Dynasty. They talk about existential ideas and all. They're oldest hippies. In the 1670s, in the universities here, they're the very hip subject matter to talk about, to study, research. The Chinese, the oldest hippies, smart people. I don't know really know anything about that project. Before this movie, I made Taking Woodstock, so I sort of go there a little bit in the American version. But yeah, if I know more about to make a movie. You have to have something cinematic happen, inspiring. Many ideas in life you can think of. That sounds like good movie idea, but maybe they're not. I don't know. I have to know the story, know the exact material to go about them.
But like you said, so much depends on the story, and you're wanting to tell that story in film. What do you have another project now that you're working on?
No.
So you're open.
I'm open.
Here's a listener who says, I think humility is one of the most important qualities of Chinese culture that adds such beautiful depth to Western art and entertainment. I see less humility in being expressed in the younger generation coming from contemporary Chinese culture and in its diaspora. How do you see that generation expressing itself through the arts? And thank you for doing what you do. It's a beautiful contribution to the world's cultural development.
Well, that's a really hard subject matter for me to give an answer to it. I don't know.
You're too busy making movies, too, right?
And I also grew up in Taiwan.
Yeah. Very different China.
Different China. Yeah. And they went through quite a bit to survive. You know, I'm glad Chinese survived for the last 200, 500 years. So they have this new thing. And also, these days, the younger generation, they realize something they're missing from the older culture, and they're getting back to it. I think many, many brilliant work will come up. They came from culturally a twisted period, and then they're yearning for something like everybody else. You know, they want the same thing as you wanted to do.
But do you have strong feelings about the future of Taiwan and whether it should be part of China as Chinese would like to make it, or remain independent?
It's hard to unite it because we live a different lifestyle, political system. We'll see what happens. I don't have an answer for that. I'm still holding a passport of Republic of China. Taiwan.
You're being wise and diplomatic. You want to keep that passport.
I cannot give you the answer. I don't have
a... But where do you see, where do you think free expression is going to go in China?
I think, I don't know. I don't run China. I'm not a chairman or official of China.
Well, it's funny, you know.
I hope it gets more Taiwanese way, more open and open. I think it has to.
I remember Amy Tan once saying that, and she's Chinese-American, she was born in Oakland, California, once saying people ask her questions about China, and, you know, because I'm Chinese, or, you know, does it mean that I have answers or I'm well necessarily great?
I have wishful thinking, so I hope it carries out in the future, you know. A lot of us, a lot of Chinese, Taiwanese has that too. And I hope it's a peaceful, prosperous, and human, you know.
Well, there are many people who love your work and admire your work, and I'm sure we'll see Life of Pi. And appreciate very much your being with us on this Hour of Forum. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Again, Ang Lee's new movie will be released nationwide November 21st. It was previewed at the Mill Valley Film Festival. It actually was premiered at the New York Film Festival. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Remind you, you can always let us know what you hear, what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website. And you can continue this discussion there, kqed.org/forum. And also on our Facebook page. Forum's produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.